overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration Service for the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
But it is to take refuge in the stillness out of which thought arises. And so when thoughts will arise like they do, like clouds in the sky, our attention is on the stillness that precedes the thought, the quiet that is always there. And just by stopping in one holy instant, we can return to the quiet. And there is a knowing that emerges out of that stillness. In the Bible it says, be still and know that I am God. And so all there is God. All there is love. I have a coffee mug at home that says, love lives here. So could we enter into that vibration of love, not as a noun, but as a verb? A love that gives and receives unconditionally to all. And as we place ourselves in right relationship with this stillness, with this love, with this presence that we're calling God, we are relying on the self, not the little self, the me person that wants to be in control, but we're radical reliance on the self with the big S. Emerson's most famous essay is called Self-Reliance, in which he invites us to live from that vibrational flow of the presence and let it express within us as an inlet and an outlet for a passageway of its livingness, if you will. So in the stillness, we listen deeply. Oftentimes what isn't being said, what isn't being thought. We listen to that child of wonder who resides within us, who stands in awe of each moment. There is a Zen story about the student who's hungry for truth. And so he finds the master teacher and he says, tell me, what is it I need to know? And as the master teacher begins to speak, a bird starts to sing and he becomes still. And the bird sings the song and the student listens. And when the bird finishes the song, the teacher says, and so ends the lesson. And so what if the opportunity is to listen to the song of a bird, or to feel the wind or the rain coming down, and without giving it a thought, we are in a conversation with life. And it's not a conversation of words. It's more of a communion of resonance, of coherence. A friend was walking through my garden the other day, and the butterflies were drinking from the flowers. And she bent over looking at the butterflies, and then she looked at another plant, and there was a bee drinking from the flowers. And it's as if she was mesmerized by the language within the garden. And then her nose started to twitch as she started to smell something that was so fragrant. She said, "I'm being driven mad by this fragrance." And so I walked her into the gate. She said, "Oh my God, I feel like I'm in Bali." I said, "No, you're in Alabama." She had never seen such flowers, such abundance of verdancy. And as she walked, mesmerized by all the overstimulation of flowers and bees and butterflies, she was hit by the fragrance of the Asmanthus, a tree that's 30 feet high, that is so sweet in its nectar, it blows you away. And so she was listening to a language that was not verbal. She was having a communion with nature. And in that holy instant, she was being embraced by the mother. I saw a shift in her. I saw a change in her. Not a mental change, but some kind of alchemy of love. Love lives here, right where we are. And so as we open to that love, to that givingness of the universe, to its creation, we receive the grace of every breath, of every moment, and we know that we are one. Thomas Merton says, we suffer from a crisis where we don't know that this is only one life. When we know it's one life and it's our life, then we have communion with butterflies and birds and flowers and rain. And we have arrived in the holy instant of now. It says in the Quran, when you remember him, he remembers you. When you remember this divine presence awakens within. And it is the self-knowingness of spirit. And that is what we are. That is all that anything really is. So I invite you to breathe into this holy instant of now, knowing that we are tending the moment, we are tending the breath, we are tending the one life as we open our eyes and we experience the vastness of the eternal now moment. You know, we live in eternity. My prayer partner, he's been so busy in Canada, and he's been really busy. He's a retired minister. He's got funerals every day. He had one last night, he has one this morning, and we all know what that's all about. And they're desperate to find a Catholic priest, and he was a fallen away monk. So being that they can't find the priest, they settle for the fallen away monk. And he says it has been such a sacred thing, because the Catholic woman that he spoke with last night, her grandmother made her transition, and she'd been reading Dan Millman's The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, The Great Spiritual Truths. And he says, a Catholic woman reading Dan Millman to your grandmother? And he says, you know, I don't think my grandmother dies and goes to heaven. I think she just transitions and that she's still here. And he says, all of a sudden, a complete stranger, and we're having this beautiful dialogue around the spirit of the grandmother. And so he said, I feel so blessed in a strange sort of way to be at this intersection of life and death, knowing that there really is no death. And I said to him, his name is Terry, I said, I was listening to my Graceful Passages CD this morning. I put it on. It's such enlightened teachers. And I was hearing Arun Gandhi speak about the loss of his father, Mahatma Gandhi. And he says, my father used to always say that when you leave your physical life, you enter into your spiritual life. And then he would say, we return to the light that we are. And then I reminded my prayer partner, I said, at every memorial service, I always say that we come here with light and we come here with love. And when we leave, we take the light with us We return to that light and we leave the love behind. So this month of September, I'm exploring the dream of this life that we have. And I'll be concluding that up next week. And the beautiful thing about building a consciousness around a question, I realize that it isn't so much our dream of life, but it is God's dream of life in us. Now, could we let go of the concretized idea that we had, so many of us, and let this something unfold within us that's much greater than anything we could conceive? When that starts to happen, we stop striving to be in control. We stop trying to change other people. We stop running away and thinking that it's greener somewhere else, it's better somewhere else. And we learn to embrace this unfolding within ourselves. I shared with our revealing service yesterday, I had the privilege of meeting a young Unity minister who wanted to come and meet the legend, me, because I've been doing this for 33 years. And I got to see myself in someone who's just starting out with his goals, his ambitions, his dreams, almost in a finite, structured way. And I'm so different right now. I want to let go of the structure and be in direct access to Source. So it was a lovely reflection of one another. I'm using Mark Nepo as a muse throughout this month, and he talks about place your dream like a mirror in front of you and look through it and see what's really deeper that's trying to show itself to you. You know, what if the dream that this form had was to be in service to the One in the most unique sort of way? This young man, he came up through music. He sings, he plays instruments. I said, so bring your music into your ministry. I brought my dance into the ministry. Let it be authentic, let it be real. And then you'll be surprised how it unfolds, not in the way that society says it should unfold, but in the way that it's going to naturally unfold through you. So the first Sunday of this month, I explored the idea of our original talent, that each one came here with a gift. And if you do everything but you fail to discover what that is, it's as if your life wasn't even here. So that's a big admonition to look within. It says in the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus, if you bring forth that which is within you will save you. And if you do not, that which is within you will destroy you. Wow. Hello. Wake up. So what is that something within? And I referenced one of my great, great teachers who lives in me, Ralph Waldo Emerson. And I just pulled out a little titch of him to remind you. This is what Emerson says. A man should learn to detect and watch that gleam of light which flashes across his mind from within, more than the luster of the firmament of bards and sages. In other words, do not look for your good outside in somebody else's revelation, but have your own revelation through this direct passageway of divine inspiration. That's what he's saying, and self-reliance. He then says, envy is ignorance, and that imitation is suicide, and we must take ourselves, for better or worse, as what we are. And he says, but we have to express ourselves. And we are ashamed of that divine idea which each of us represents. What is the divine idea that you represent in this world? And just sit there and lowly listen. What is the divine idea for me? For Judy Graffitz to dance. I know that because she was my dance partner and she would do line dancing. Maybe it's to be a teacher with children. And lastly, he says, God will not have his work made manifest by cowards. It needs a divine man to exhibit anything divine. So, he says, trust thyself, whatever you are. Trey found a little movie last night. It was called Everybody's Talking About Jamie. And it's from the British Columbia. No, it's from the United Kingdom. It's British. It's show. And it's about a little boy in a British town who just turned 16. And he identifies more with his feminine side than his masculine side. And his father is just totally adamant about him being a real man. But he is a little bleach blonde, and his mother understands her son. So on his 16th birthday, she gives him some red high heels. And he says, oh, Mom, I'm so thrilled. So here he's conflicted, and everybody calls him you-know-what at school. And this is in the UK. But his dream is to be a drag queen. And his only best friend is a little girl who wears a hijab. She's a little Muslim girl. And she says, go to the prom and drag. Well, I turned off the play because Trey said, you don't need this before your Sunday sermon because it might infect you. I said, you know, what a beautiful idea. This young man has a dream for his life that nobody else accepts, but he knows who he is. So we'll see what happens. He went into a dress shop to see about getting a dress for the prom, and the dress shop owner was once a famous drag queen. So now, through the law of attraction, he attracted someone who can help him live his dream. Now, who are we to judge anybody's dream, whatever that dream may be? Absolve you to yourself. Trust thyself. At last, God will not have yourself made manifest by cowards. You have to be courageous to step out of what the world would have you be. So that was the first week, to understand what that hidden talent is. Last week, I talked about initiating the gifts that we have. The gift of creativity, the gift of inspiration, the gift of love, the gift of peace, the gift of remembering. And as I shared with you, the Quran says, when you remember him, he remembers you. So could we remember this something that is so sacred within us, that demands expression, and that it is a gift, that you are a gift to the world, whatever that might look like in your world. Not to be a conformist, because to imitate is suicide, says Emerson. And conformity is the hobgoblin of little minds and the divine of statesmen. We don't want to conform to an old idea of who we should be. We want to allow ourselves to be an individual. That's what I said to that young minister on my front porch yesterday. And so this week, I'm going into the third aspect of the dream, that we get to dream. And it came from Mark Nepo's little book here, where he talked, Slowly is the Way. And he tells the story of a young lady who's climbing, what's the big mountain in Africa?
Kilimanjaro.
And she's really anxious to get to the top of Kilimanjaro. And the Swahili guide says to her in Swahili, slowly, slowly is the way. We want to rush up that mountain instead of taking it one step at a time. My sister-in-law, she's kind of going through one of those stages in her life. She's going to be 65 this year. She's getting on Medicaid and Medicare. And so she's got this need to go and climb Mount Katahdin in Maine with her girlfriends. It's almost like the Kilimanjaro thing. And she said, and I'm going to be right up there with all the young ones. And I said, Lynn, slowly is the way. Slowly is the way. So he talks about we're a culture that wants to do things fast, fast, fast. And he said, it's time to slow down and enjoy the ride. This morning, the rains were coming down, and we woke up the pug upstairs and carried him down. And we're trying to find that opportunity. People who have dogs know what I'm talking about, where they can go out and do their business before the pouring down rain. So we carried the pug out, and we took him down Bert's alleyway, where Bert used to always walk. And all of a sudden, I'm seeing Bert right there next to Humphrey. And Bert, well, I gotta go slow because, you know, my hips aren't so good. And he'd walk down the alley and he'd maybe circle and do his poop and then his pee. But he wouldn't be complete without going up to his water bowl. So I saw him just like Humphrey. Humphrey doesn't move that well either. So he's waddling up to the thing. And I said, Trey, they're both right next to me. And Bert wants to go up and get a drink, but the rains are going to come down soon. And so it was slowly as the way. You couldn't expect Bert to move fast. And Jody knows what I'm talking. It was such a privilege for him to waddle over to the steps. And he would look at me and he'd maybe put his paw on the first step, and then I'd scoop him down and I'd lift him up. You had to learn slowly is the way. So thank you, Bert, for teaching me. And you know, I work in the garden just like Gigi does, and after a while, bending over and picking up, you realize I got to slow down a little bit because I'm not going to be able to move my back. So here's what Mark Nepo says about slowly is the way. He says, we often rush to cultivate our gifts in an effort to accomplish or secure what we want in our dream. But our beauty is released when we slow down to meet the world through what we're given. Slow down to meet the world through what we're given. A dear friend of mine at work was having issues with people that were giving false information around the vaccine and around this. And she asked me, she said, when I speak the truth that I know in science, sometimes they don't want to hear that truth, but you still have to have the courage to speak the truth, even though the world doesn't appreciate it. And so he's saying, don't let the world dictate who you're going to be. He says, there are many ways to slow down. And there are, and he says, knowing that life will definitely speed us up. And he says, many ways to quiet the race that's going on within us with our thoughts. and all around us, knowing that we will join the race again. And so here's some of the ways that he lists that we can slow down in this fast-paced world that would have us identify as the doer, do more, do it better, do it quicker. And he's saying, stop and notice that we're in a pandemic. We're going to have a board meeting this afternoon, and I'm in my ninth year numerologically, and that's the year of letting go of what doesn't serve you in your last nine-year cycle. And then in your first year, which will be on my birthday in December, is to embrace this new way of being. And what I realize is that because of the pandemic, we're creating a whole new way of doing ministry, a whole new way of doing the way we communicate with the people. It's not the music and the announcements and all the fluff and the flurry. It's masks and sitting there and the ringing of a bell and a beautiful soul taping this so it can reach other people. So what if we get, through the grace of this pandemic, we get to adjust how we approach the world? And he's suggesting that. So here's how he says we slow down. He says, letting what we keep in, out. If you keep your anger in, it'll become kind of a toxic expression. But if you observe the anger, oh, there you are, my little anger. Well, then the anger can be met, and it's less toxic. Letting what's in, out. I was reflecting with a friend yesterday about surviving as long as we have. And in the 80s, I was right there in the front line when the AIDS crisis hit in Atlanta. And I don't know how many young men I assisted as they made their transition. And it just didn't seem to end for a very long time. And the AIDS quilt came to Huntsville when I was a new minister around 1990. And it had been a decade by then that I had been working with the AIDS crisis. And I remember walking around the quilt, and it's patches of people who died. And they were handing out Kleenex to people because everybody was crying, but I wasn't crying at all. And I said, I've become so numb that I can't feel anymore. And when my mother died, I didn't cry. It was just like I'd become immune to the tears. And then it was decades later, I'm up in Canada at a minister's gathering, and someone did a ritual grief process. And they said, allow all the grief that you haven't grieved to come up in this moment. And I thought, I don't have any. Just like when I'm walking around the quilt. There was a volcano of grief that came in, that came up, that was spewing out of me. I couldn't stop it. Once the volcano started, I remember fleeing the room in that Vancouver hotel, running to where they had the practitioners. They're supposed to pray for you. Finding the room in some fakakta corner of the hotel, I opened the door, I fell to my knees, and to her credit, she just put her arms around me and let me sob. So he says, one of the ways to slow down is to let what is within out, whatever that thing is within, and to give it space. And that's why we have each other. To process. You know, I call Jody and Gigi all the time when I have an issue, and they give me space to just let what's within out so that it doesn't fester and sit there for 20 years. So that's his first way. His second way is to face what we avoid. Face what we avoid. We've had almost a jungle here at the center. Gigi said, I'm going to have to use a machete to get through all these plants. And so through that admonition, I got a crew out here, and we've been taking down some of the vines that are choking and climbing up over the building. And it was such a relief, even though it was very costly, to face what I had been avoiding and not run away from it anymore. So what if life is like that? We get to face the very thing that is giving us troubles and not turn away from it. Maybe it's a parental relationship. Can I open the doors and have that conversation where in the past I had avoided that conversation? There's something that's really a beautiful closure. You know, the people that have moved to Five Points that are cutting down all the trees, they recently bought the house across the street. And as inevitably would have, the tree cutters were out there for 2 days from morning till night. Every single tree was cut down. The beautiful willow tree, the oak trees, the maple trees. They managed to save one little hemlock, and they trimmed it up. And I went over, and I said, thank you for saving the hemlock. I said, I remember the day it was planted. It was a young couple. And you know, when you plant a tree, you plant immortality. My prayer partner was saying that he had his cat for years, and when the cat died, his name was Artemis, he planted it in Victoria underneath an apple tree. And he said he went back to Victoria, British Columbia, went to the old house where he lived, and the apple tree was maybe 30 feet tall. And he said, I felt Artemis living in that tree. It's kind of a crazy thought. But what if it's all significant. So I said to Trey, we got to let go of the battle with the trees. You know, they're going to do what they're going to do. And in the meantime, we're going to plant trees. I reminded him, I saw this thing on PBS. Don't give up your dream of planting trees. In Karachi, in Pakistan, it's like 19 million people. It's a very large city. And the temperature in the summer, because of global warming, was 45 degrees Celsius. Now, that to me is like 115, 120 in Fahrenheit. And of course, they don't have air conditioning. And in that culture, the women wear the hijab. And so people are dropping dead because of the heat. But one little man goes out there and he's planting trees. It's called the urban reforestation of Karachi. And when the trees are growing up, what happens is the temperature is like 10 degrees cooler under the shade of the tree. So what if this man who was for something, my prayer partner said this, I told him that story, and he said, there's a little sandbar up there in Victoria where he lives, and there's this little Indian man from India, and he's planting oak trees. And he went over and he said, what are you doing? And he says, I'm planting oak trees. He says, someday they will be great big trees and give you lots of shade. And Terry Shea said, well, it won't be in my lifetime or your lifetime. He says, no, but somebody will get the shade someday. He had a dream. So could we let go of the battle and fighting those who cut them down and be the proactive one who plants more? So that's one way to slow things down. A third way, he says, put things down. What are you carrying around? What is your narrative? Are you a victim of somebody? There's a beautiful Buddhist story that says these monks were walking through a little village and they came across a river. And on one side of the river was a young girl and she says, I can't swim. I can't swim. And so one of the monks, he picked up the young girl, she crawled on his back, and he walked through the water, it was up to his neck, and he got to the other side, and he put the young girl down. And then the monks continued on their walk through the forest. An hour later, the old monk said to him, I can't believe you have a vow of chastity, and you picked up that young girl, and you carried her over the water. You know that's not accepted. And the young monk who had done it, he said, I put her down an hour ago, and you've been carrying her around ever since. Let those who have ears to hear hear. So are we carrying around a narrative that I'm a victim of anybody? If we are, then we're creating that self-perpetuating victimhood until we put that down. So one of the ways to slow down is to stop. Stop with the narrative. Stop with the complaints. Yeah, we have a crazy country and things are going on here. But you can go absolutely bonkers when you try to understand it. So someone came up to me the other day and said, what's going on in our country is just stupid. It's just stupid. And I said, yeah, it is. I said, but you know what they say? Ignorance is temporary and stupid is forever. So that kind of absolves you from stupid. And with the ignorance, maybe you can raise consciousness a little bit. You know, when we're no longer ignorant of something, we can then choose a proactive way. So that was his third way of slowing down. His fourth way is not going back to sleep once you awaken. You know, one of the very first spiritual truths, and Judy remembers this 33 years ago, they say there are no victims, there are only volunteers. Hello? So that means to me that if you choose to identify as the victim, it's because you're identifying yourself as someone who's put upon by the world. But when you awaken, that you're really not a victim, that you're a co-creator with the universe, when you awaken to the realization that nobody can hurt your feelings, well, that's an awakened perception. If your feelings are hurt, it's because you have an expectation and it wasn't met, or you have a projection or an attachment, and then your feelings get hurt and you blame it on them. No, no one can hurt your feelings. When that realization awakens, wow, well then, so don't go back to sleep. There's a beautiful Rumi saying, this being connected to the universe is the whole intent of this. So don't go back to sleep into the self that sees yourself as separate. That's the whole idea of emptiness, to be empty of this separate self that carries around the story, that identifies with victimhood, that wants to be in control, that projects its expectations and attachments and resistance out into the world. That isn't real. So once this something that is real wakes up, that doesn't have a preference, do you think the universe prefers a rainy day to a sunny day? The universe just says it's a day. But the ego can say, I don't want a rainy day. Don't bring around rain on my parade. I'm one of those kind of people that loves the rain. And when the rain comes, I open all the windows and I drink in that nectar. And when the sun comes out, I'm not so much wanting to lie in the sun. I look for the shade of a tree. Does that mean I'm getting older? Or that it doesn't mean anything? You know? So then you can say, something is changing. And his last way is to practice the art of acceptance and deep listening. Practice the art of acceptance and deep listening. To accept what is. This is the day the Lord has made. I rejoice and am glad in it. This is the life that I've been given. Could I cherish it? Whatever it might be. So the deepest acceptance and then deep listening. My little Zen calendar this morning, it said, when the mind becomes quiet, we hear so much more profoundly. So then could I let the practice be to become still? And then what is deep listening all about? What are we listening for? What are we listening with? What is listening? It was Carl Rogers, the famous psychologist, that said, all anybody really wants is to be heard. I would venture to say even our animals want to be heard, but they don't speak a verbal language. Could we hear what they're actually saying? You know, Jody's Isabella has a challenge with her jaw, and she was messing with her ear. And could we be tuned in to hear what isn't being said by our beautiful animals? Baby Speck died of cancer of the jaw, and Trey and I weren't listening to the messages that she was trying to tell us. So this listening is really powerful. Could we listen to our body when it gives us a sensation? Not that we're going to get rid of the sensation and call the pain bad and medicate it, but maybe it's a messenger that something needs to be embraced, something needs to be shifted and changed within so that the without can reflect that. So it's such a dynamic process of within, without, that we're going through in this life. So today's slowly is the way. And I was reflecting on the tortoise and the hare. You know, when you're a little kid, you learn the story of the one that runs the race really fast, but the one who plods ahead step by step is the one that wins in the end. That young minister who's so ambitious to have his career defined, seeing all these mentors trying to redefine this whole thing of a new way of doing ministry. And I said to this young man, I said, it will naturally emerge and unfold if you just allow it. So trust in this emergence and this unfoldment of whatever it is that would be God's dream of you. So there's a shift there, isn't there? Trey and I have been living in our house for 25 years, and if you've ever grown a garden, you have to learn patience. It starts with planting a seed, and then you have to have the patience as the seed slowly germinates. And then you have to have the right location for the plant so that it can put its roots down. It needs the right requirements of rain and sun and shade in some cases. And if you don't give it the right circumstances, you'll be grossly disappointed. When Trey and I lived in Boston in the late 70s, we had a little place on Beacon Hill, and it had a little courtyard where we could garden. But I didn't realize at that time, I was in my 20s, we had two huge trees which gave us this ample shade. And so I went out and I got seeds, and I planted tomato seeds, which became tomato plants. And I placed them along the fence underneath the great oak tree. And the tomato plants must have grown 15, 20 feet tall with nary a blossom and nary a tomato, because I didn't know what the plant required. Was that a curse or a blessing? I consider it a great gift, because then I realized we have to create the right conditions for the unfoldment of our soul, for the growth of the garden within ourselves. And to be gentle and patient as this, whatever this thing is that we are, begins to emerge as an expression that's unique to that individual. So I pulled out my little book, The Gardener, this morning, because he speaks to my soul. And he talks about the beauty of slowness in the garden. And he equates it largely to a snail that he encountered along the path. So I'm going to give you a taste of him talking about the snail, and then let that weave into some kind of closing experience around living life slowly. It's a rainy day today, and it's so beautiful out there. Trey said we might get floods. And so you either can approach the rainy day as a curse, or you can see it as a blessing. It's all so relative, you know? And so this is the gardener. He's having a rainy day in his garden. He said the powerful storm clouds were moving away from the hardy inland regions, and through the chinks of their dark, massive clouds, the sun returned again through thin rays to do its task. He says, suddenly, a ray of the sun hit a steep slope on the path on which the gardener was walking. Inhaling the scent of the humid earth, don't you love the smell after the rain has hit the earth? Inhaling the smell of this earth, and a figure of a small stale snail stood out. He was slowly dragging himself along the herbs in the garden, seemingly saying to me, "Slowly, slowly is the way." And so he stopped, and he observed the little snail making his way after the rain. When I was in Ascutney, Vermont with Thich Nhat Hanh on the 10-day silent retreat, the last day we left the big tent, there were 900 of us, and Thich Nhat Hanh was walking. It was called mindfulness walking. You lift up your foot, you place your foot. And the rains had come the night before, it smelled of that verdancy. And I noticed on the pathway, everybody in silence, that the worms had come up over the night, and they were long, they were Vermont worms, and they were crawling across the path. And I realized the whole practice was to slowly step over the worms and not to step on the worms as we mindfully move together down the path. So I think the gardener's having a similar experience with the snail. He says, "The gardener stopped and he contemplated the snail for a long while, at the end of which he said, 'Blessed are the slow, because they don't miss even the smallest detail of life.'" Blessed are the slow, for they don't miss the smallest detail of life. So could we slow down, stop and smell the roses? Could we bend over and watch the butterfly as she drinks the nectar from the flower? Could we stop long enough for a pug to wiggle up to us and with his one eye look up with such devotion and then pause, and he pulls you into his chest? He wants you to love him. You know, you have to be slow enough to figure that out. So let's just take a moment. I'm going to ask Raoul to go back to the bell. And we're going to drink of the nectar of mindfulness. Mindfulness happens when we stop and we slow down. And whatever presents itself is an opening to grace, which is the givingness of the universe to itself. So when you're ready, my friend, take us mindfully into the bell. Let the bell ripple out into the universe, bringing solace to those who are suffering and peace to those who are confused. And the bell of mindfulness rings. It slows our mind down, slows our breath down. And once again, we are resting as the self. We are resting as the breath within the breath. We are resting as emptiness dancing. This emptiness that we all share is dancing in the world. We see it everywhere, revealed. It says in the Quran, "Am I not your Lord?" To which we, the creation, say, "Yes, we witness you." And so we witness the Lord of creation everywhere revealed. Not necessarily as something vast and mysterious, but something as humble as a snail, perhaps, or a worm, moving along the pathway of life. And as Meister Eckhart said, if you can see God in the smallest of things, it is better than seeing an angel. And so on this beautiful rainy day, we open to the alchemy of the rain. And we imagine perhaps that we are a tree putting down our roots into this beautiful earth that nurtures our roots with the minerals and the water. And then we feel the external life reaching up toward the light, where our leaves become factories that create food for our survival. As the sun photosynthesizes within our leaf, and sugars and all kinds of things are produced, and we experience life, we notice that the tree is empty of its tree nature. It doesn't think, "I'm a special tree better than the other trees." It's just empty of that. And in that, it can give and receive. And we are that same expression of life, giving and receiving. So now I would invite you to fall into the dream. The dream that life is having of herself. This divine presence, love, took up residence on this planet in a myriad of forms so that it might express uniquely and beautifully something that is not conceptual or mental, but something that is universal and all-embracing. We feel a congruency with all of this life, that we're living simultaneously, loving one another, supporting one another, serving one another, mirroring to one another the same truth. To embrace this life that you've been given. If you're a snail crawling up the path, a worm that's emerging from a water-soaked soil, or a human taking a step, where every step is an acknowledgement that right where we step is holy ground. And when everything becomes holy, then the dream can emerge not from the local mind, but from the divine heart of the One. In my office there is a photograph of David Tharp, a fellow soulmate, and he is holding me in an embrace. And as I look at that on Sunday mornings, I feel the heart merging with the same heart. And I say, love is here. It's not a human love, it's a divine love. And so we come here to metaphorically embrace one another, where we meet in the heart of the One. And we know that that love that we experience is a love that was never born and a love that never dies. And so in this slow way of reflecting, we can invite the ancestors in. All the ancestors who are not here in form, but who are here in essence. And as someone shared in the revealing service when Jodi was doing her treatment, baby Speck showed up by her side, and she shared that with me. And of course I smiled, because I thought I was the only one that felt her sweet essence love. And so when we can move out of the mind that wants to be so rigid in the way it thinks, and enter into the soul, the spirit, we are opening, we are listening, we are revealing, we are unveiling this inner splendor that longs to be revealed by means of its creation. And so we so humbly say to this universal presence, this divine love, this life belongs to you. Do with it as you will. And in that surrendering to this divine love, to this divine presence, we witness how it unveils, how it unfolds, how it emerges effortlessly, easily, in every breath, in every moment. And then the one who was the overly zealous doer that had all the plans just sits on the sidelines and smiles. We've come home. Drink in the emptiness. Drink in the peace. Drink in the breath of life. And feel the healing alchemy of this stopping, of this slowing down. Feeling that divine presence stretched in smiling repose at the core of your being, I invite you to place your hand on your heart. And we'll join in the heart salutation by saying to this divine loving presence within us and all around us, I honor you. I respect you. I love you. You are the deepest aspect of life itself. I radically accept you. I joyously celebrate you. And I effortlessly reveal you. You are the light within the light, the love within the love, the breath within the breath, and we honor you. So opening your eyes now, feeling this grace-filled moment with all of its mystery, open your hands, let your light shine, wear your masks, be safe. Thanks for sending in your tithes, and thank you, Michael, for your wonderful technical skills today. Loving you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.